Garland upstairs. Oh! Sixth and inside! Oh. A thunderous dunk!
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Since we last recorded, the Cavs had two disappointing losses, or I should say one encouraging one against Washington. It was close, came down to the last couple of minutes, but they weren't able to pull it out, and a less encouraging loss against the Toronto Raptors. But of course, all of that got overshadowed because of one play with Kevin Love. To discuss that with me and a whole lot more is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing all right, man. I don't know. Maybe I got my priorities straight finally, but I didn't find myself as worked up as the rest of Twitter did last night. And, you know, I used to be right there with him. And maybe it's just been the end of a long season. Maybe it's been a weird year in real life, but I sit here going, that sucked. But like, I'm not nearly as unhappy as my Twitter brethren, I feel.
Yeah, it was a frustrating play. Like, I remember in the moment, it was obviously disappointing because it was a close game. And I think when that clip kind of got pulled out of its context within the game, you have a whole lot of people kind of looking at the kind of last few years and assuming that, oh, it's related to teammates or situation, things like that. Whereas within the flow of the game itself, it was pretty clear. He, a couple plays prior, got hit to the floor, had floor burn, was bleeding from his knee, a few other non-calls or calls that didn't go his way. And this was kind of the culmination of that. I don't think there's any mistaking that he needed to handle that situation a whole lot better, especially as one of the team's leader. But at the same time, like, there's so much that goes into it that I kind of understand where some of this frustration is coming from, even though the way that it was channeled and the way that he acted out in that moment, there's just like, there's no excusing it, right? Like it's something that he even admitted after the game, should have handled that better. Apologized to his teammates, according to Chris Fedor, but it's just not a great look, and it's a disappointing moment at kind of the end of a disappointing couple of weeks where the Cavs now find themselves out of that play-in mix.
So far as I can tell, there's two real reactions, one of which I don't really think we need to acknowledge much at all, which is like, get K-Love out of Cleveland, or this man is done in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think that has much to do with what he did last night. I mean, maybe in the macro, but doesn't really jive with everything we've heard from this team all season regarding his mentorship of Colin Sexton, the way that he's clearly fought through some lingering injuries to get back on the court, even though he still doesn't look really 100%.
No.
So I guess if he, I guess it's possible that that's what that is, but I don't think so. Then you have the other people who are like, hey, this dude threw a fit and sabotage the Cavs in a game that they were still in, that they had fought to be in shorthanded. I think that's a more interesting argument. I think looking at the play itself, I think the reason I didn't have a strong reaction is I don't think he meant to inbound the ball.
Yeah, I think he was trying to bounce it down to himself.
I don't know about that. He might have been wanting to hit it, but it could have been a delay of game penalty instead of a...
Gotcha. That's very possible.
Instead of a open three for the Raptors. And then I described his reaction after him knocking it in bounds on Twitter as, you've had a bad day. Kids have complained. Boss came down hard on you. And you had to pick up groceries on the way home, and you hate picking up groceries. And you walk in, and you just open the door, and the bag rips. And all your produce spills onto the floor. And you don't, like, scream to the heavens. You don't punch a wall. You just stand there broiling in your own disdain for what your life is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was his vibe. And like that kind of, and I think, you know, what you want to see after a bad reaction is to like at least try to make up for it.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that. So I think an apology was certainly warranted. It seems like one has been delivered.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that he needs to get these outbursts under control, because I do think they're embarrassing to the team, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard on the rest of the team when no matter how well or bad things are going, one clip goes viral, can go viral on Twitter the way it does, and then really cast a light over your whole culture.
Yeah. And like at this point, you kind of have to know how that narrative plays out, right?
Yep.
Like, I think at this point, and we've talked about this before, the frustration for Kevin Love has to be, of the last 3 years, this is by far the most competitive team that the Cavs have had. And it's happened with him out of the lineup, where he could have been a major contributor. You look even this past month, with Love not playing up to his normal standards, they're still dramatically better with him on the floor than they were prior to him being there. So for him to miss out on all of this stretch before, like earlier in the season, for the young players that maybe there was frustration in the past from him on kind of the learning curve and going through those growing pains, for those guys now to be playing at a more consistent level and really elevating and starting to translate to wins without him being there and without him being a part of it, and then by the time he's finally able to get on the floor, he's not able to contribute at the level that he's expecting. We saw frustration with Larry Nance going through the same thing coming back from his illness, where he was frustrated that he couldn't contribute at the level that he's accustomed to. So for Kevin Love to go through all of that and then just doesn't work out. Once again, a whole bunch of the team gets hurt. You fall out of that play-in mix. I understand that, like, the frustration coming from him in that standpoint. Like, I think that there's levels to this, right? Like, you can acknowledge that he's had moments where he didn't live up to the standard he needs to as a leader on the court over the last couple of years, while also off the court being a big part of the development of Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, and the rest of the team, because they all credit him, right? Like, you have to believe the players in that circumstance, because I don't think they would throw out that credit if it wasn't warranted. But you can acknowledge both of those facts as you look at a situation like this. And even Jason Lloyd wrote in The Athletic today that this isn't like the other outbursts. It was frustration at the refs. I believe that they had some of the replacement refs working this game. Malachi Flynn was getting a better whistle than Darius Garland, and I was screaming, and I wasn't handling it well on the couch either. But you know what? Like, you do have to handle it a little bit better, because yes, it's frustrating. You just got bowled over. You just got smashed into the stanchion. It's now a two possession game. You feel the game kind of slipping away, but no, it causes the game to slip away a little bit more. A turnover and a three pointer. I don't think we have to make much more of it than that. It's just understanding how this stuff plays out, because people are, until the Cavs are consistently a playoff team, people are going to make the same jokes that they've always made. It's going to be the same narratives, because people aren't tuning in trying to figure out what the nuances of the Cavs season are. Like, national media members are just not going to do that. So you have to understand how situations like this play out.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think, I don't know. I think that's why I just didn't have that strong of a reaction. I think maybe the discussion should be whether Kevin Love still helps this team, because I am seeing a lot of narrative on Twitter is like, why is he even here at this point? You know, from some frustrated Cavs fans, including some really smart Cavs fans whose opinion I really respect. I certainly want him around still, you know, even at his salary number. I understand, like, why some fans are ready to move on, but I think we're maybe having a little bit of a short memory here. Mm-hmm. I they're not having any 8-point quarters anymore.
That's true.
their offensive rating, I joked on Twitter that he's worth 10 points to their offensive rating just by existing. Mm-hmm. He's not even playing that well.
Well, statistically, it's actually 6 points, but yeah, like it is, like, you were exaggerating when you made that point, but at the same time, it is almost that dramatic. Like, having him out there makes a big difference.
Is that his on-court, off-court split this season? Is that what you are referencing?
I was referencing the team's offensive rating prior to him coming back in the lineup at the start of April. Did you see Yahoo Sports clip? It was an interview with Kevin Love that surfaced again today?
No.
So basically, the question that was asked him, and I hate the framing, because it to me, it's so much of kind of the the issues with the coverage of the NBA today, but it was basically Chris Haynes asking him, like, what do you see in Cleveland? What, like, why are you still playing there? And for, I mean, he's under contract. That's how things work in professional sports. But Kevin Love was talking about basically the contributions, how the belief in the young players and whatnot, how if there was a parting of ways, how he could still be a contributor to either the Cavs or another team. But he also acknowledged that, hey, there's two sides to all of this. Like, I need to be available more. Like, it's difficult for anybody to count on me when there's injuries and things like that. So, I mean, he's a human, right?
You said it. You said it in a DM chat with some of our Cavs buds, where you basically were like, it's just wild that two of the last three seasons, Kevin has missed like the first 50 games right off the rip.
Right. Yeah. Like the first year back, and there was frustration about not going for it, but that decision was made for them because he got hurt in preseason. And then I guess it got worse to the point he needed surgery after a couple games. This season, missed like the first three quarters of the season. It's difficult. Like, I absolutely feel for the guy that this isn't what anybody envisioned. Him, the team, like, you want your guys that you are committing to be part of the cornerstone of the team to be available more. But you know what? Like, it's just one of those moments. I don't know how much more there is to say about it, because I think everybody understands what the situation is. He understands that he's got to be better. He's owned up to that. He's owned up to his credit. He's owned up to all of those kind of outbursts in the past and said,
every single one,
I need to be better. And there's always context to it. This one's different, but because it's still an outburst and people's memories automatically get jogged to past moments where things didn't work out, where I believe he was fined by the team for punching a chair. I think that was reported at one point as well. It's going to get lumped in with that, whether there's truth to it or not. And to me, here's the thing, and this might be how we can transition away from this, but to me, it's just disappointing because I feel his frustration. Like, as much as I understand from an intellectual standpoint what another high pick will do for this team, which they are going to get a top 10 pick at this point, it's pretty much a guarantee. I can't see them falling below six in the odds, and we'll see what happens from there. But, like, I understand the frustration. It feels so close. Like, the young core is so promising. Darius Garland has ascended. Colin Sexton playing at all-star level. Isaac Okoro, career high. I understand the frustration, because when you feel like you're just about to get over that hill and you have either, if you want to call it a setback or whatever the case may be, that's disappointing. Like, it's really, really frustrating because this team is better than their record. It's just going to take another year, and it's frustrating. It's disappointing that it's the turnaround hasn't occurred this season, but I do think that there's enough reasons to believe that it will occur.
Yeah, and you know, I will say this. I think people might kind of view leadership in two binary of terms. You're either a good leader or you're a bad leader. Mm-hmm. And I think Kevin has proven in a lot of ways for this team that he's a very good leader. He's been very supportive and engaged on the bench. On the bench, and a lot of games where I was like, I can't believe Kevin's here. Because a lot of stars go home when they've missed as much time as he missed and weren't quite ready to get back up to snuff. We've seen him support Colin Sexton. Sexton picks his brain at every single timeout, he says. So, you know,
we've seen him play every back-to-back since he's come back, because he's trying to win. He's trying to contribute.
So there is evidence of him being a good leader. And then, you know what? Even good leaders make mistakes and publicly misstep. Everyone here has managers. Most people here have jobs that have managers, and they have things they love about their manager, and they have things they hate about their manager. And leadership is not, you know, one size fits all. So I think Kevin was being a bad leader when he threw that fit on the court and made that really, really bad play. Mm-hmm. I don't think that makes him a bad leader. And I think that there is enough evidence to me to suggest that he is a good leader and well-liked in the locker room, even if he's not exactly the kind of leader I always want him to be. And that's why I like having him on this team. And that's why I'm certainly in no hurry to move on.
Yeah, agreed. And to your point, Jason Lloyd mentioned that in his column again today, that he's well-liked by the players in the locker room, and he likes the players in the locker room right now. Like, it's a different situation than it's been in the past, and I think everybody can relate to the frustration of losing, and we all direct it in different ways. Some of us direct it at referees, some of us direct it at players or coaches on Twitter, whatever your outlet is, that aggression or that energy gets channeled towards somewhere. Yeah, sometimes it gets channeled towards me, which I can take it. I can take it. I understand why people can find me annoying. But speaking of annoying, the Toronto Raptors defense did a hell of a job on Darius Garland. Garland obviously playing the second night of a back-to-back. There's been a more focus on him with Colin Sexton out of the lineup, as you would expect, shorthanded. But the Toronto Raptors also do a really good job of taking players away. You've seen it with Steph Curry in the finals. Giannis, Joel Embiid says they're basically the only team that can take him away and take away the shots that he wants to take. There are countless examples of the Raptors and their ability to take an option away. And I thought for the most part, he handled it pretty well. You could see the team was making adjustments to get him open shots. They were playing him off ball at times, running him through kind of screens off ball, just missed quite a few open shots, which that happens second night of a back-to-back when you're a little bit fatigued. But I thought he did a good job handling that well for the most part. It just kind of speaks again to the need of having more creators, right? Whether that be front court creators or having someone like Colin Sexton that can make it more difficult for a defense to sell out on you at in the same way. And I thought for the most part, it was a productive learning experience for him.
I definitely felt like that was a game where we missed Colin Sexton.
Yeah.
Just being able to attack, be able to be a play finisher, a secondary play creator. A lot fell on Darius in that game, and they're so good at cutting off the head of the snake in Toronto, even this limited team that, you know, is not a, you know, Eastern Conference contender by any means. But yeah, that's my biggest takeaway. Can I take us kind of off topic a little bit, though?
Yeah, take us wherever you want. And by the way, how's your voice holding up? You disclosed it before the podcast to me, but let our listeners know you're going through the flu game right now.
My throat hurts a little bit. I got vaccine number part due. Today.
I didn't realize that part of it. Yeah. Okay, there you go. Congrats.
So though I think the sore throat's actually just a bit of a seasonal.
I was going to say, it's a little early. It's a little early for some side effects.
Our Ohio listeners will tell you that the weather's been swinging back and forth like crazy around here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but on the Darius note, a guy on Twitter that added us was like, he hate me, asked what Darius splits were on back-to-backs. Man, he's shooting like 26% from three on back-to-backs.
Yep.
Like his numbers crater on back-to-backs. I find that really, really interesting. And I hadn't visually perceived that trend, and it's one of those trends that I actually find is encouraging, because as he continues to get used to the NBA schedule, those kind of numbers are going to go way up.
Yeah, and a lot of those back-to-backs, especially this season, are third game in four nights type of back-to-backs, right? Like that there is more fatigue. Another interesting kind of tidbit in looking at those splits of rest for Darius Garland is, even though he's shooting worse in those games without any rest on the second night of a back-to-back, the assists are actually up. It's 6.5 assists in those games, which, again, Toronto's a good example of. His shot wasn't falling, and he went out there and he created opportunities for other teammates, right? He came away with 10 assists. I think he had like 15 or 16 potential assists in that game. They had a tough start off of Garland passes in that game that was driving me nuts. But he finds other ways to make an impact, and that's the most important thing. And that was one of the things that we discussed coming into this April stretch of, well, when they are in these games where they're competing against these teams like Toronto that are trying to make a play-in spot, if your shot's not falling, you have to find another way to make an impact in that game. And one of the things that I loved was with Toronto really selling out to take the ball out of Garland's hands, to make him less effective, Isaac Okoro stepped up in a big way. He recognized the soft spots in that defense, and he shredded them. He shredded them for a career-high 20 points, and that is just such a great step in his development of recognizing when teams are doing that, when they're selling out on Darius Garland or Colin Sexton or both, when everyone's healthy, and finding those gaps in the defense. That is such a way for him to become more effective and more consistent as an offensive player while he works on the technical aspects like handle and the mechanics on his jump shot.
Yeah, I mean, 16 attempts, only went 1 of 8 from three. So he went, seven of eight from 2-point land, I think, is my fast.
Don't make me do math live. Don't embarrass me, man.
So obviously, you know, the 3-pointer, I think the jumper's regressed a little bit lately, in terms of, you know, the form looks very inconsistent. But the fact that I feel like he's finding ways to contribute despite that is really, really encouraging. He's getting better. The handle's not there yet. I don't think the handle's gotten much better this season.
Oh, no, I don't think it has either. We wait for those improvements.
Let me get there, pal.
Okay.
The handle's not better. And I think what people think of when I don't think people really look at, like, what it takes to be a good finisher at the rim. Like, they just either see ball goes in or ball doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Collins' rookie year, I talked about the fact that he couldn't use his handle to create good angles to attack. He was attacking someone with squared up hips every time. Like, no, the speed wasn't worth anything because he couldn't turn his defender with, mm-hmm. with his craft or with his footwork. Isaac still can't do that, but what Isaac is that he's built like a brick house. And, you know, I think that he's learning how to get his body into guys a little bit better when he attacks the hoop. And he's able to kind of use his body to shield as he attacks. And for a below-the-rim finisher, that's really, really important, right? Because when we see him attacking, it just has no chance unless he gets some crazy English to fall, is when he's attacking a squared-up defender that is able to meet the ball with their body. He's doing much better at shielding and kind of bumping guys. He did it to Pascal Siakam in kind of after some semi-broken play against the Raptors. And that's really the way he's going to finish this season. And once he adds the craft to it, then he can become a good finisher instead of an okay finisher.
Yeah, I think that's such a smart observation. And I really do think that, like, he has the touch, right? Like, we saw in college that his finishing at the rim was superb. Like, that was one of his greatest strengths. And I do think that the biggest reason why that hasn't yet translated is just not being able to get to the same spots.
Got
to
get the angle. It's a game of angles. that's why people like Luka Doncic can be so good. You know what right. I mean? You don't have to be a freak athlete. You just have to be skilled and have really good footwork and generate the right angles to the rim. So, like, that's the part of the craft Isaac is starting to figure out in short order. I think once the handle, if the handle can take another leap, then I think he'll be a good finisher, a legitimately good finisher. Because as you said, he's got better touch than you're expecting when he gets it up there.
Yeah, no, he really does. Like, we've seen acrobatic finishes from him where he really does put that English on the ball and get crazy shots to go down. It's just getting to those angles, like you said. And I just love that we're seeing improvement from him throughout the season. Like, that's one of those things that we see with Garland, we see with Sexton, and now with Okoro. And, like, it just kind of speaks to the work that these guys are putting in. Because you can have the best player development staff in the world at your disposal, and you still need that buy-in. You still need that commitment from the players. And I think when you look at moving forward, that's one of the most encouraging things, is that these players do buy into what the Cavs are selling. They buy into what the coaches are trying to get them to do. And with Isaac, like, he came in with a very high floor on defense, and it just keeps getting better. Like, you could tell there were times where he was driving Russell Westbrook absolutely insane, where Russ was just mad that he was shutting his water off and that he wasn't able to get to his spots. Russ also just plays mad all the time. He ran into Hardenstein's upper arm and got mad at it. So that's kind of just the Westbrook signature. But man, that Wizards game, that was a lot of fun. I was really hoping the Cavs would steal it. But I tweeted after the game, the mistakes. So Garland had a few turnovers in the final couple minutes there, and learning how to execute is the next step, right? Like learning how to execute in those close games, understanding that defenses are going to take away things. They're going to make things more difficult. And all night long, Garland was playing like he was on that Westbrook Beal type level where he's controlling the game. He's making an impact in all of his minutes. But the difference between Westbrook and Beal and where Garland needs to get is that understanding, learning how to close, learning how to be that difference maker, because the Cavs have had some close losses. Like you look at, I bugged our buddy Anthony Lime about this because he was talking about how the Cavs haven't had a close game in a while. And I said, well, a lot of those games were close in the last 3 minutes. The final score just went to 9. Like that's still a damn close game, and that's still good experience.
Also, they had a 4-point loss, a 6-point loss. What are you talking about, Lima?
Well, that, to his credit, that was a little more, maybe about a week ago. But this is another example of one of those games that kind of just got away at the end. But I thought overall it was a really encouraging performance and just another example of Garland taking that next step, which, let's be honest, like at this point in the season, we got, what, 9 games left? By the time we podcast again on Sunday, there will only be 6 games left. Like, this is slipping away from us really, really quickly. And just focusing on the development of the young players that are available, which I saw a few people say that they didn't want to tune into the Toronto game because of the very, very lengthy injury list, which I guess we can talk about in a moment. But I was thinking back to year one after LeBron left the second time, where we would get ourselves hyped up for a Colin Sexton that was incredibly raw and not very good, and Jetty Osman. That was our young core at that point. And at least right now, we got Garland, we got Okoro, we got Jared Allen.
I'm like, sure we'll have Sexton soon.
Sexton, I believe, is listed as day-to-day, so he hasn't been ruled out for the game against Orlando, which is a great sign. There are reasons to watch. Like, I'm still excited to see how these guys perform on a play-to-play basis. There's probably, just looking at the schedule, not going to be a whole lot of wins down the stretch.
You know, if you are worried about our draft pick odds, don't you worry, you sweet, sweet soul. This is tough. The upcoming schedule is going to be pretty brutal. They're banged up. They, you know, I think folks are going to be more likely to sit down the stretch if they're hurting, because the season is, I hate to say lost. That feels like maybe a needlessly negative term, but mm-hmm. They're not competing for the playoffs anymore.
The result has kind of crystallized.
We know that
it's basically impossible to make the play-in, and like, I feel terribly for Larry Nance at this point. Like, he tweeted out that
poor guy, man.
Like, talk about someone that doesn't.
Can you imagine? By the way, and I know that there's a lot of like player soapboxing, and we fought against like the overly, you know, blind support of the player empowerment era. Like, there have been some stuff where we're like, hey, like, you should still act like a good person. You know, like, we fought against like this blind, like, whatever the players do is good. Mm-hmm. But if I can be a pro player soapboxer, can you imagine breaking your finger as a professional athlete and everyone being mad at you for breaking your finger?
I'm laughing because of the audacity of it, not laughing.
What an outrageous premise. So yeah, poor Larry. If you are tweeting that Larry is like, why is Larry always getting hurt? I'll bet he's wondering the same thing, guys. So, you know, be easy on the guy. He's had a hard year.
Yeah, he has. And I needed you to answer this question, because we are believers in karma. Is this proof that karma doesn't exist, or is this something that we're going to get repaid for with good karma heading into the lottery?
Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we, Justin? Because okay. I think that if they fall again, you know, I think we probably proved karma didn't exist the first time mm-hmm. LeBron left. And the team kept winning lotteries despite not really moving in the right direction. And this year, this time it seems to be going really well, and they keep getting rotten luck. So I don't know. I lean towards the chaos side of things, where it's just all random numbers.
It's all
random numbers.
Life is just vibrations, baby.
But I will say, as we said last time, do good stuff and your chances to get lucky are a lot better.
Yep, exactly. And you look at the physical toll that this season has had. Like, look at the four teams that made the conference finals last year. All of them have had just tons of injuries, and it's been a rough season for them. This year is just beating the hell out of players. And I think you look at this final stretch. Why play guys on a back-to-back? Like, I think there should be some level of rest, at least for the veteran players.
While they have eight players active, I don't think they have that choice, Justin.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. And you still want to get the young guys as many reps as possible. But someone like Kevin Love, yeah, I do appreciate him playing in back-to-backs up to this point. But I think you'd want to take a more cautious approach because while the end result of this season is kind of set in stone now at this point, you don't want to have any injuries that cut into development opportunities in the summer, right? Like, you want to keep these guys healthy for this final stretch. So obviously you want to take a little bit of a cautious approach. I still think that there's valuable developmental minutes to get. And one of the things that we might be seeing more of down the stretch, and we saw over the last two games, Jetty Osmond stepping up in a meaningful way. I thought he was obviously a lot better against Washington versus Toronto, but it is nice to see that after some time away from the team, that he's playing a little more within himself. And we've talked about it before, how people want new is new. We want to see other guys like Broderick Thomas and Lamar Stevens get burned down the stretch. But I still think that there's a value in kind of Jetty finding his footing again, finding a little bit of a rhythm, because so much of his issues this year, at least to my eyes, come from him trying to do too much. From, okay, I no longer have my starting spot guaranteed. I no longer have 34 minutes a night. I'm going to make an impact in the time that I'm out there. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to take on two defenders and throw up a wild shot at the rim. And when he plays within himself, you can live with some misses and whatnot, but he's a much, much more effective player, not only in creating shots for himself, but for other people as well.
Yeah, I think of him specifically as a playmaker, the way that if he just runs pick and roll and makes the pass that's there, the offense really is well served by that. We talk about the fact that this team is in pretty desperate need of a large playmaking wing. And Jetty can kind of sort of do that, but mm-hmm. when he overextends himself, it yields terrible, terrible results. Yields bad layup attempts. Like, make the passes there, the one pass away pass. You don't need to make skip pass. You don't need to be a basketball genius. Make the passes there, or, you know, attack if they give you the lane. And if not, reset. It's okay. You don't need to rush. Similar to the three. Like, I mean, he was firing some audacious threes earlier in the season.
Yeah,
full sprint off the curl, at the nail. Just like, it's just like insane, insanely hard Steph Curry level threes.
You don't want him going Carlton Banks on you, is what it really comes down to.
No. So, you know, I think that he is definitely, when he plays within himself, it's certainly better. I think if I'm the coaching staff, obviously I want to continue to encourage that. I also think they should encourage it on the defensive end. I think when Jetty gets in trouble, it's not because he is a bad individual defender, though I don't think he's great. It's that he often is way over helping and putting the team in a bad spot.
Yeah.
So I think the message to Jetty should just be breathe, play contained basketball as much as possible. Mm-hmm. We aren't in a position where you're the only player who can dribble because the whole guard core is out with injury.
Yeah.
So just take the shots that are there. Take the passes that are there. Help when appropriate, but don't overhelp. You know, I think 10% less of Jetty everywhere leads to 30% better production everywhere.
Yeah, you want to see him play more effective team basketball, which I guess is a bit of a balance down the stretch, right? Because you, now that you are somewhat out of it, you want to play team basketball, but at the same time, you probably want to experiment with a few things. Like, I wouldn't, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, I wouldn't mind seeing Okoro do a little bit more, like trying to get him to, all right, let's see what it looks like if he's running a pick and roll or two, right? Just trying to get guys in situations where they might
see,
not
that
be.
That is not where my brain is at all.
You don't want to see them trying new things, or
not really. I want them to try being as good as they can be.
Okay.
Within within reason. I think that they have had so little time to try to be as good as they can be this season because of things that are outside of their control, that at least with the young core, Darius, Colin, Jarrett, Isaac, that and ideally with Kevin still in the lineup, that they can just like work on developing the habits that they're going to carry into next year. That's what I'm more interested in. I don't really think that Isaac running 20 pick and rolls a game, while like I totally get it, and like I don't know if you're wrong, but it's just not the way I would attack it. The way I would attack it is, let's try to be the Suns from the bubble, where they were, where they took the bubble very seriously, even though they had functionally zero shot to get into the playoffs, and springboard some momentum. Obviously, Chris Paul helps with that. Don't get me wrong, but like I think that institutionally is where I want the team to be, which is let's try our damnedest to like continue to develop this culture that we're looking for, especially on the offensive side of the ball, where things have been so up and down this season. And let's get more reps with Darius. I mean, I mentioned this during the Raptors game. Darius is getting so good at looking off people and looking off Jared Allen when people are terrified he's going to get a deep duck in and dunk. Hi, Millie, if you can hear her in the background. You know, he's getting, like, I just want these guys to keep developing synergy together. I really think it's important that the Cavs hit the ground running a little bit next year. And to that end, I want them to develop the habits that get us up that mountain.
You know what? You swayed me to some extent here. Yeah. Millie right now is crying in the background because she hates
it when I'm right. Well, hates it when I'm right.
One, she's obviously Team Justin. And two, she also finds it very difficult to figure out what Garland's doing on a play-by-play basis. He does a really good job masking that. And she empathizes with all the defenders
She just really... She sees what Ken Burch had to deal with, and it sucks.
Mm-hmm. You're raising a great empath there, Carter.
She is. I'll tell you what, Justin, Parent Corner, getting more empathetic by the day. You know, it's crazy. Like, she's moving from just bummed out because she's hungry or like can't do something to like, well, that really hurt my feelings. It's wild. Wild. All the stuff I didn't think would be that interesting as a parent, so interesting. Everyone should try it. Not everyone.
happy for you, bud. But getting back to your point of kind of how to tackle these last few games, in my head, what I was thinking was, okay, there's going to be nights where they don't have players available, like the Toronto game. And in those opportunities, I'd like to see, all right, let's experiment. Let's try things. Let's get Okoro to run a couple pick and rolls or any other thing that the coaching staff feels would be productive. But at the same time, it's probably difficult, especially without any practices, to flip that switch of, okay, Okoro, tonight we want you playing good team basketball, and tonight we want you initiating and we want you doing other things. I think establishing a hierarchy is really important. And that probably is part of Kevin Love's frustrations as well, because it's difficult to get a good sense of where he fits in. There's been so little time with the full healthy roster, and for them to naturally figure out, all right, what do I do in these situations? Who can we rely on in other situations? Like that is something that takes time. It takes time to build chemistry. And I do think that there is a value in trying to establish that down the stretch, because while Larry's not in the mix and he's obviously a big part of this team moving forward, you still have your starting five, which hasn't been the case very often this season. So getting some reps there and figuring out how those pieces that are on the bench, whether it be Lamar Stevens, Broderick Thomas, Dean Wade.
You are missing exactly one foundational piece of your core rotation, in my opinion. Hartenstein, maybe, and I think he'll be back soon.
You beat me to a Hartenstein joke.
I'm sorry. You know, other than that, Delly is probably shouldn't be in the rotation next year.
Mm-hmm.
Dotson, you know, Wendler, maybe if he can find a foothold. I'm sorry. You're missing Torian Prince too, who, assuming he's on the roster, will definitely be in the rotation. So you're missing two rotation players, but of your core, you're the people you actually are invested in growing around. And I'm going to include Kevin Love in that, because like it or not, fans, he's still under contract for a couple more years.
Yeah.
I think that you have a lot to work with still here. This is not a truly lost season in terms of development. Like, you still got stuff. You still got toys to play with.
Yeah, and to your point, Larry's probably the only one that you run plays through, right? Like, you can run kind of the same sets that you would for Torian Prince with Broderick Thomas. And yeah, he's not going to hit the shots as consistently, but he could go out there and kind of hit that off-ball action. And
I'm starting to like Broderick Thomas, Joseph.
I do too. I like what he brings to the table. I like to see him get a few more reps down the stretch. But like, a lot of these guys that are coming in off the bench are complementary pieces that play off of those starting five, right? You're not doing hockey shifts out here. So I do think that there is good opportunity there. And that's what really swayed me as you were talking. I was thinking, yeah, you know what? The starting five is there. And yeah, some nights you're not going to have Kevin Love. Maybe you're resting him on a second night of a back-to-back. You're slotting Dean Wade into that role and seeing how he performs, right? Like, it's all educational. There's all things that you can take away from this. And this is all stuff that isn't reliant on the end result being a win or a loss, right? Like, this is all opportunities that we can learn on a possession by possession basis where this team is at and what steps they can take going into the next season.
I am emotionally distanced from the result at this point.
Me too.
You know, wins are nice, but I don't even think normally it's like wins are, you know, losses are, but wins are awesome. I'm even like, wins are like, okay, whatever, you know, like, it's good to win because it's good to develop those habits, but I'm much more interested in how they get there, how they get up the mountain for the remainder of the season. And honestly, man, T-Wolves are getting hot. Come on, T-Wolves! Each loss comes with a bit of a, maybe they could jump a little bit. Yeah. I don't think they will, but maybe they could. So, you know, I don't know, man. I am with you that it's all results. It's all process, not results at this stage.
All results, eh? Tough couple games. I did catch myself. There was a moment against Toronto where I caught myself being like, I really want to win this, which might just be because it's the Raptors and I hate seeing them win. But I, for the most part, I'm with you. I will always be rooting for the Cavs to win in every single game, but I will also root for the teams below them to win at this point because I would like to see that. And right now, just looking at it, it looks like the floor is six. Because Sacramento is a few games ahead of them and they play OKC three times. Like, OKC is going to find a way to either decapitate their players or whatever is necessary to lose those games. And that just means, all right, you're locked in at six. You have about a 40% chance of picking top four. I am thrilled with that. A 40% chance when you have four core guys that are worth being excited about is awesome. If you fall a spot or two, or if you stay in place, there are really awesome options that I'm already sold on, so we're good there. So you know what? Go ahead, root for those other teams. the play-in is out of the mix. Root for the Cavs, but also root for any other team below them, because that's, you know what? Why not? Let's get that 1% more, which isn't worth sacrificing development over, but it's still kind of nice to have, right? Yeah, you can go get a coffee or anything else you need, right? Anyways, thank you so much to all our listeners. To those that are listening live on YouTube, make sure that you like and subscribe. It helps show up better in the algorithms. If you're listening on a podcast, you can support us by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cats.